meeting here. We should have plenty of time, so fingers crossed we'll get out of here a little early. I was like promising that I get people on my side. Let's do this.
Hey,
we'll work. Yeah, exactly. Person, so you'll see me fumbling with my notes here time to time. But welcome. This is the Ethical Guidelines for Intuition class. So I thought I'd start off sounding really official, make the recording come off right. But basically, in a nutshell, we've had this class typically towards the end, oftentimes the last class. So if you hear me referring to things about now that you're the door and stuff like that, it's probably kind of my leftovers from that. But I think there is great value in having it early. I've actually spoken with Francesca about having this class get you guys early on. So you have a framework that you can build on and have these kind of common touch points to kind of work with as you progress through the coursework. So I thought I would just kind of go over quickly sort of the outline of what we're going to cover tonight. So as I say, kind of some talks on the subject. I'll kind of go into touching on things like the ethics committee, what that story is about. We'll go into the code of ethics that you guys received. And I won't just read it verbatim, but I'm going to kind of go through it with you. So there's of a relatability, a sensitivity to some of the key points, because that document, believe it or not, has been polished and kind of pulled together from committee members, from other contributors over the years, so it's really got some weight. So I wanted to kind of call out some of the more meaningful bits and pieces that resonate for me, at least. Let's see, we'll have some time for a little Q&A. We'll have a break about the usual time, I think 7:50 or so. And then we have this cool exercise in the after the break. We're going to come back and split into fours. I don't think you guys do that typically, but Scott's doing the math and he'll figure it out for us. But basically, four groups taking up a hypothetical question, a different one for each group. And then we'll have somebody sort of sketching some of the notes. Just basic points that are discussed, and then we'll come together and kind of have some dialogue. And we've gotten feedback over the years that that's the more dynamic piece of the puzzle here. So we've had classes where we've had the lawyer come in and just talk, and people appreciate some of the detail in it, but they also go to sleep. So having this more dynamic participatory aspect is kind of it makes it a little more real. Like, oh, I can relate to that storyline. I can piece together my family with that family and blah, blah, blah. So just kind of getting grounded in specifics more. So that's how we'll play with that. We'll come back, do some kind of final wrap-up, and then closing meditations and close things out. Again, hopefully like maybe a half hour earlier or so. Okay. Any questions to start? Oh, by the way, my teaching style is very open, as I was just describing. I enjoy the kind of give and take. I feel like it makes it more animated, more engaging. So if at any point you're like, wait a minute, I got a question, or I have another thought, please incorporate, feel free to incorporate that input. And Scott, you as well. One thing I would request is that you please wait until the microphone comes to you. It's kind of a headache, you know. Got this thing, I really want to spit it out. Everyone can hear me, let me just say it. But we found that on the recording, it goes down for whatever reason, the sound goes down to nothing. So the people listening after the fact really lose the kind of benefit of kind of the brilliance that you guys are contributing to. So we're going to start with the opening meditation in just a sec. And I just wanted to highlight that this is really not kind of kind of the best opening meditation ever, but it's really geared towards setting the tone for what we're up to tonight. So if you can, you know, while you're listening to my words and getting more centered, really consider kind of what ethical standards are for you. What is this class really, how is it showing up for you in your life? What does it mean to you as you go forward? Again, if this was your last class, now that you're going out into the world, what would you know, this really represent for you and your thoughts? So if you'd like to go ahead and get settled, comfortable, we'll maybe give the lights and such. Start here by just kind of bringing ourselves into the present moment. And we'll use our breath to engage that. So starting with a couple deep breaths and intending to be more present, to really draw your focus into being more integrated, more present in your physical body. Further intention while you're doing the breath, listening to your breath, give yourself full permission to be here. And another layer of just acknowledging the self, supporting the self, be settled, feel safe, secure, get present. Or deepening your grounding. I'm sure you guys are masterful with this by now. You have your own personal techniques. Just consider deepening that, connecting down into the center of the earth. Allow this grounding to really be a supportive connection. Allow this connecting with the earth to be one of support, grace, ease. Become more grounded, acknowledge that connection. Really allow for a release of any tensions. Go with your day. Go with the things that may be active in your space, scattering you, dispersing your attention. Allow it again with ease and grace. Just neutralize, drift down into the earth. Bear witness to the cycle of breathing in, breathing out. The further support of your grounding, release tension, bring up the support of the earth, the out-breath, release that tension. Just continue to allow those kind of cycles and that further grounding, deepening up this centering connection with self to just continue there in the background. Focus our attention on settling back into our meditation sanctuary, split screen, if you will. Feel relaxed or centered there in your meditation sanctuary. Really ask yourself intuitively, what might be here in the way of me being more present here in this moment? To kind of use your intuition to help guide you into a deeper state of presence. Both helps to inform you in a way that's non-linear and non-mental, but it also engages you, sort of plugs you in. It's a way of thinking through the back door with a spirit-to-spirit communication with self. Again, just ask, what might be in the way of me being more present? Acknowledge that. Just receive that information with ease and grace, passion, non-judgment. Sometimes just putting your focus on something, allowing this acknowledgement can help to find a way of neutralizing. In that would like us to focus on bringing in SB. Really surround your space, body. Allow SB to help you focus on generating this field for yourself. If you were centered in a sacred temple, your own personal sacred temple is this field surrounding you. Again, allow SB to support and guide you in that. Just as we did a minute ago, just ask for any resistance. So to be shown, acknowledged, released, neutralized. This isn't a competition who can have the most sacred temple, who can rev up the most SD. It's what is right for you personally here in this moment. Directional, as I said before, it sets the tone for the work and the focus here today. Incorporate whatever visuals help you really establish this connection, the idea of sacred temple for self. Attune your physicality, your mindset, your awareness, your emotions, really all be in step with this idea of creating a sacred space for self. Furthermore, really intend to have this space then be a reflection of your highest state of spirit. To have a real intention around refining the quality of your energy, to also be in step with this concept of a spiritual sacred environment. So including here a sense of honor, reverence. Allow yourself to take in the grandeur of this special place you've generated for yourself. Really call forward an acknowledgement of the qualities that would naturally be present if you had built out a formal, sacred environment. So in this temple you've created for yourself, however you set that up, the SB there is helping to support the ongoing purification, concentration, the refinement process. And the intention here is not to be the best or to conquer this task, but really to deepen this capacity to tune to kind of the deeper places in self, the deeper place of truth, for qualities of your own being, your own connection to spirit. Now add to this visualization you've created for yourself a vibrant set of SB columns circling the entire temple setup, work field, however you visualize it. A ring of SB columns will continue deep down to the layers of the earth, connecting to the center. A way to add to this visualization a further connection to clarity, a deeper state of ownership. Now visualize the circle of SD columns really connecting solidly there into the earth, really bringing about, again, a more vibrant expression throughout the field. Like a deeper connection for wavelength of coming online here in the sacred environment. Affirm that your sacred temple is well protected. Now allow yourself to be centered here in the sacred temple and really soak up this sense of goodness. Kind of refined quality at the heart of this kind of pure expression. again, release whatever is not in step with that higher resonance. Staying in the field, in your awareness, not in step or not supportive of this more refined frequency. I'd like you to remain seated there, remain in meditation, just continue this refinement, continue the process of being more present, consider things that may come up to the surface that need to be acknowledged and released. I'm going to continue here to just kind of call out a couple of further points for consideration. So again, seated in your sacred temple, listening from that vantage point. And I'd like you to consider the topic of ethics, and what it'll look like for you going forward, however you choose to practice intuition medicine. How you'll choose to operate with integrity and truth as kind of a guiding force to explore how your personal expression manifests. Really considering, you know, what is that next leg? You're not leaving the academy tomorrow, like said in other situations, but kind of the direction of the class here. But we'll be leaving, you know, this form, and what is the new form you'll take? How will you carry kind of the ethos, the integrity, ideas of, you know, honoring the sacred itself and others? Really continuing to heal and learn and grow, but just in a different capacity, maybe as a TA or starting your own practice, whatever form that takes. Taking a minute now to reflect on your journey thus far, really considering some of the greatest wins and big aha moments. We're not really driven by an intellectual clicking together of bits of information, but oftentimes it was, you know, stepping back, listening to spirit, seeing and saying, allowing intuition to inform the situation. Really taking stock of how that's been such a core value for realm study. And considering how you position yourself as you move forward, considering, you know, humility, honoring spirit, considering, as I've said here, tapping into reference of spirit as your own kind of personal guidance. Rather than seeing yourself as learning some kind of technical training, considering that you've launching yourself now into a realm to activate spirit, really be a resource for mirroring the true spirit of others back to them, that they can make those connection points within themselves. It's really one of the areas where the topic of ethics comes in strongly, remaining in a state of neutrality, where again, you're honoring the truth, being up with others, choosing to explore and honor their truth. Maintaining a sense of an ethical standard as you make these engagements. Wrapping up my thoughts here, just to consider you know, this idea of transitioning, moving forward into the next stage, the next challenge, the next form of this realm of study, that not being asked to go out and prove yourself. There's a moment to move out into the world and prove what a healing mother or father to the world you can be. It's not a time to take a stand for what you've been trained in, expressing yourself as somebody who now has all the answers. But it's again a moment to consider moving forward with humility. I said before, really continuing this path of openness, holding intent to draw upon your intuition and spirit. But yes, it will be an opportunity for evolution, for the growth. Some people will say, well, past alumni, past graduates, who will come back and say, God, you know, things didn't really kick off until I graduated, until I moved to this next stage. It was a time where I felt compelled to put things into practice and went out of the student role, started to engage. I think that's this crux where it's really important to consider where we stand in relation to these ethical standards related to this work. Okay, so when you're ready, you can wrap up those visualizations you set up for yourself, affirm your grounding in the present moment. Back to the room, give yourself a big hug. Okay, so as I said, we're going to touch on some different technical points. We're going to go through the handouts in kind of a more deeper, focused way. Really engage some of these more dynamic hypotheticals. But, you know, my intent here in kind of setting the tone, Scott was really great about getting here early and helping me set the room. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes and kind of directionally setting up a class. A lot of it has been focused on, let's not get carried away in technical. You know, I was mentioning to Scott before, we've had this class take different forms over the years. And, you know, the times where people would just, you know, blah, 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 as I said before, which kind of lose people. So, again, we're going to kind of keep the energy up and keep it focused. And the point of the opening meditation is to really kind of offer up that directional support for what underlies this whole discussion. So, I will start real quickly with a personal intro. I recognize many of you from Practicum and different places around the Academy, so it's great to see you here. So, yes, I've been engaged in Practicum. I love Practicum because it's sort of, it takes all this great work we do here, but it has like a looser feel. So I just want to encourage all of you to actually consider, you know, if there's time where you want to meet up with other classmates, we'll make space for you somewhere, so it can be that kind of creative expression. Or you want to come in and work with a certain kind of person, we'll help you, you know, get connected with that. How I came to be in this kind of role is many years ago, came to see Francesca as a person in need of a reading. She was actually doing readings back then, and she suggested that maybe I should consider the meditation classes that she was teaching. And I hadn't been, I don't know, really steeped in this direction. I had always been kind of open as a young person, but I considered that as like, okay, this is going to be a room full of, you know, such and such kind of people, and I'm not going to fit in, whatever, the meditation. But I said I'd give it a try. And the first night, things really stood out to me as being very practical. Being more grounded, being more effective at work, having better boundaries to then communicate better, such and such. But I was always kind of the quiet person in the class. I always say I sat as far back in the corner as I could. So I never pictured myself as stepping forward and, you know, teaching any of this material. But over the years, you know, you hang out long enough, Scott knows this, that eventually she puts you to work. And so that was kind of part of the equation. But I think I've always had a real enthusiasm for the work. I've seen over the many years of doing it, the advantage, the benefit, and there's a real spark. I'm sure you guys have had the experience of participating in someone else's aha, waking up moment. It's just like, I don't know, it's addictive. It's really one of the draws that keep coming back to it. So that kind of spurred my connection. We continued to do the classes. The classes at that time, way back in time, were in Francesca's basement. We moved to the place downtown Sausalito in another location, and here we are here all these years later. So over that time, I've taught various courses. One of the classes I'm really keyed in on is the professional tools training. So that really kind of takes the context of learning to be a TA and start your practice and really expands on kind of what are the key elements. So even if you're not going to be a TA, there's great supportive considerations about stepping up in your own life. What does it mean to become a teacher, your kids, or be a role model in your workspace, that kind of thing. So that's a fun class that's been going on for years. In the past, I've taught kids classes, and as I said, the practicum is kind of where I find myself on a weekly basis. I previously taught this class with another gentleman, Jonathan Koresh. If any of you know him, is a great resource. So if we go into deeper legal matters, we can kind of draw on support from him if need be. Also on the handout, that million page document that was emailed out to you, hopefully some of you have announced, because we will kind of drill down on some of that. But on the front page is my contact information. And as I say, I'm really enthusiastic about this support. I welcome any kind of questions thrown at me. If I can't get you the answer, I'm going to plug you into somebody who can. Okay, so I wanted to touch on the ethics committee real quick. We have a body connected to the Academy of six past alumni who come together and consider ethical issues. As I said, they've been critical in pulling together the...
please mute your phone.
Unless you have something great to say, then
unless you
speak louder. So they've been helpful in setting up the guidelines that we all reference here. And one point I would like to add is that, again, as you move towards graduating, you are now becoming a part of this expanded community of graduates, alumni, students. As such, I really welcome your input. What I was coming to is this standards of ethics, this list that is supporting the community is really a living, breathing document. If you have some contributions you want to make to that, I would totally welcome that input. We're going to be as peers, and I think having a document that we all reference and work with kind of supports the quality and integrity of the community together. So feel free to own it in that kind of real world way. Yes, so the ethics committee that is will come together if there's a particular issue that needs to be looked at. We then advise Francesca. She's not part of that committee, but we'll work in tandem with her to kind of communicate around that. We don't luckily have a ton of work to do in this regard. I think that's a good sign that the community is operating with integrity and how Francesca chooses to teach and kind of hold those kind of energetic standards, if you will, have really paid off. But we have had circumstances where we have come together, met, advised, and so forth. So I wanted to talk briefly on the... Yes.
Could you give us an example of yeah. when the Ethics Committee has convened?
Oh,
and...
that question.
Yeah.
I would love to go wouldn't say that anything's really tawdry and deep and incredible, but it does call forward some kind of communication, some kind of course correction. So rather than going into details about the who's and what's, what I would say is some of these things are reflected in some regard in hypotheticals that we'll go into. So I think as we engage those, you'll start to get a flavor of what we're talking about. Again, it's not real malicious or deep kind of stuff, and yet it's really relevant. It's like, wow, you know, I hadn't thought of that over here. I'll go into things in more details, especially as we engage the instructions. But I think the benefit of these hypotheticals is that you start to gain some foresight. So rather than saying, hey, 3 steps into it seemed pretty innocuous, and then on the 4th step, I realized that we're in some kind of weird territory. So it's sort of before you take that 1st step, you're already having that information. Right? You're already having that awareness of like, okay, well, let me take this 1st step in such a way that it prevents, you know, that particular path. So a couple points, and as I say, we'll engage that deeper. Okay, so a couple ideas or thoughts around why it's important to have this code of ethics, or a code of ethics. And I've touched on it so far, but I wanted to further clarify. It really helps, you know, I feel like I just said this a second ago, but I'll kind of reiterate this idea of setting a group standard, a group agreement, if you will, that we're all here together. We're not being forced to operate a certain way. We're kind of relying on this standard of agreement to kind of promote kind of this vessel or this contained ship we're sailing it together. So it's really helps to set the expectations around this. What are appropriate boundaries? What are this, you know, all these subtle things we sort of take for granted, having them called out as a way to kind of build or cement what this agreement is about together. You know, again, we're not a group of iron workers that have the union that comes in and says this is how you operate. So we're sort of reinforcing a level of professionalism by adhering to kind of a group agreed upon code of conduct and so forth. So it's really enhancing professionalism and in association with that, a sense of value. And the last point I would say about it is it's really a reference point. So when things do occur, we can say, hey, we have this group agreement. We have these specific ideas that we've all come together on. We are now going to take this action in support of what those listings are. There was a point in time historically where we didn't have this kind of document. So I think as we've grown, it's just kind of a helpful tool, as I say, to kind of support the body, but also to be a reference to then course correct as needed. Gonna keep myself on course here. That was a challenge last time. We went way over, and I kept measuring my friend who I was working with at the time, just pointing to the clock. So we're doing okay so far, but I want to just keep on course here. So I'd like to, before we move towards a break and then transitioning to our groups and stuff, I would like to go over the handout. So if you have the key one, I'd like to call out, I know it's quite a document. We actually used to give them out printed in big binders, and then Francesca's like, no, we're going sustainable. That's why you get the big fat email. So the one I'd like to call out is literally the Code of Ethics for Intuition Medicine Energy Practitioners. And it's okay if you don't have a copy of it. I'm just going to kind of bomb through it. Again, not reading verbatim. You guys can go back through it and kind of tune into what resonates or what calls out to you. But this is my way of saying, hey, there's value to this document. And here are some specific considerations around the given point. So the first item is recognize the nature of the healing relationship and honor professional personal boundaries. Here I'm just calling out, you know, the idea of honoring boundaries. Did my little highlighter, those were a few keywords. Accuracy, honesty, and truthfulness. This idea of, you know, I mentioned it before in the beginning, really not coming to this work with an idea of who you are, what you need to accomplish, or this person has now paid me money as an energy practitioner. Oh boy, I better be such and such. But really to come back to a place of spirit, trusting intuition, really honoring that place of here, accuracy, honesty, and truthfulness. I'm not getting swept up in ideas of what needs to come forward, but really trusting these kind of deeper sources of clarity. B, they mentioned honoring sacred space, witnessing, and spirit-to-spirit communication. These are not just kind of flippant phrases. This idea of really bearing witness to what is showing up is so powerful. It feels subtle. It feels like that's the thing, that's the non-doing thing. Now I want to participate in panel. How is witnessing being proactive? But really trust me, this is kind of one of the key principles of really making panel work come alive, engage on kind of a deeper level. So the witnessing and then the spirit-to-spirit communication, having that deep capacity to honor what is the truth in the other person, having a relationship with that rather than these stories or an egoic kind of approach to things. Highest spiritual integrity, I called that out, and the client's greatest good. This idea of, like, I'm working with this person, they've given me this story, I have sort of the background of what I'd like to bring to the table, but really setting all of those things aside and saying, what is the expression of highest good coming forward to this person? I'm working with them, concentrating on this, that, and the other thing, but ultimately here to support the greatest good, highest good coming forward for them. So that combined with spirit-to-spirit communication, let's skip over D and then E in the same section. Maintaining strict client-practitioner neutrality. Limit work to agreed upon times and places. But this is more about engaging the other. Again, it moves more into the realm of private practice. But it really says to stay buttoned up. Be very clear in your communication. So this idea of maintaining neutrality, not getting invested in where things go with the other, and having clear boundaries around what is being set up. It feels kind of rigid at times, but it really helps to relate, support clear energy boundaries. So moving on to the second one, maintain the integrity of the client and provide informed consent. This is section A. Honor the values and individuality of the client. How I see this is really relevant is you're not coming in saying, here is the standard of what success should be. I'm now comparing you as a client to what I think should measure up and work for you as well. You're really kind of getting into their shoes. You're being more sensitive to what their path is, what their story is. It's a different type of approach. So see this as really calling out that deep sensitivity to honor what their story is, how they're approaching where things are, starting from there as a support for them. B in the same section talks about informing prospective clients. Here they talk about the nature of logistics, potential services and whatnot. I just highlighted the informed prospective client. It may be know that you're going a particular approach or you've set things up in a certain way, but I think the key here is just having that clear communication. I always say if you're working with a new person and you're closing your eyes and moving your hands around, that could be really off-putting. What if you had never received the energy reading at all? before, and this person sitting in front of you doing something that is not funny. So the idea of informing clients maybe in advance or maybe in the session, I'm going to do my thing now. This is what it's about. I'm going to concentrate on kind of setting up the boundaries for the reading. Close my eyes. I use my hands to kind of help my focus. So don't worry. This isn't weird stuff. Explaining myself as I go. So that kind of clear forming and communication is really powerful. The other point in the same B section is appropriately document. So there's a lot of feedback, pros and cons around documenting a given session. If you're working with somebody, a client, you could go back and use that documentation to say, hey, you know, I had informed them, we did have these discussions. If there ever came to an issue around that, other people feel like, you know, I don't want to be called forward with my notes and have some kind of complication as a result. So you'll have to find your way in that. But this document is really supporting the idea of documentation. The next one is discuss with clients in advance the limitations. So again, giving some clarity around the framework working with. This is not a cure-all. This is what it can potentially help with. Here's, you know, examples, testimonials of work that's been successful in the past. But this idea of sketching out the parameters so that there's not big surprises or big gaping holes with the experiences. Moving on to the third point, maintain client confidentiality. I think this goes without saying. Again, promoting a sense of integrity in the work. You know, if you're doing a session with somebody and then going on a hike with a friend and just casually talking about it all, it seems innocuous. That person doesn't know this person. I want to kind of talk about what my morning was about working with this client. My friend, I tell my friend everything. But you've kind of degraded the integrity of that kind of sacred bond of communication with the client. So on some level, energetically, that has broken down a bit. For time, that can really cause some complications in different ways. So I just suggest strongly to just be super solid in that realm. Just kind of put it out of your mind that this is something to be discussed in any other realm. Not only honoring of the client, again, it really goes a long way to up the ante of the integrity of the work you're trying to do, the quality of that connection, which you'll have maybe with the next client as well. So things to think about around that. Of course, the further point about divulging information, if by law, you know, somebody's speaking about hurting themselves or others, or there's harm to a child involved, obviously you'd have to break confidentiality. So that goes without saying. Okay, moving on to the fourth point, demonstrate respect for a client and other professionals. This is sort of, again, this idea of integrity in the course of communication. I'm just kind of buzzing through this one. You know, working collaboratively with your client, that is, again, getting in sync with where they're coming from, their communication, operating with respect, compassion, kindness, and non-judgment. Sometimes it's easy to slip into a particular role. This person's really crying out for a father figure, happened to be a father figure. Just going to kind of drift into the territory, tell them what they need to do, because that seems like an effective channel that they're listening to. Well, that may not be supportive. That may be a little dance that's kind of taking you on course. So maintaining kind of a neutrality, a sense of respect, compassion, kindness, non-judgment, staying out of those sticky kind of ruts of relating a rote patternistic kind of way. Next point is keep agreements, avoid unrealistic or unclear commitments, and the integrity, just allowing yourself to operate cleanly with really clear boundaries drawn. You know, maybe it's a friend of a friend, and we already know going into it they're kind of flaky. I like my friend, and by association, they seem cool too, and I'll just be flexible. Well, that may just kind of be loosey-goosey with the scheduling. Maybe we're going to be loosey-goosey with how the communication, how the boundaries are, how, you know, whatever. So this idea of kind of being buttoned up really does translate on a lot of different levels that you may not be thinking of in advance. So helpful to consider. Number five, commit to do no harm. Obviously, that aligns with this idea of holding the greatest good, kind of the focus of here they speak about clients' welfare being the highest priority. But it's so powerful. I've been in readings before, maybe in panel. You've probably had this experience too. Nothing's coming up on screen. I really wanted to have a good panel. I came in, I'm well rested, I had dinner before I got here. What's wrong? Why is this not working? Really, in those moments, trying my focus back to here to help. What is the greatest good for this person? So right away, I'm starting to shift out of what my story is. I wanted to have a good night tonight. I wanted to walk away from this panel feeling like a rock star. Well, already that set me up. I'd be hectic. So by just calming that and drifting down into freedom, this isn't about my rock star needs or whatever. It's really about the greatest good of this client in front of me. So using that as a way to get more in step, get focused, really get connected and start to see what real information is needing to come forward. So I actually take that a step further and I'll have visualizations that help move in that direction. So things to kind of play with in your own practice. So here again, conduct sessions with the sole objective of benefiting the client. Skipping C, under D, do not diagnose, prescribe, or treat medical disorders. So you want to be really clearly aligned with what this practice is, what you're truly offering. If you happen to be a doctor of psychiatry and you're here in this class, fine, that's a different territory. But what we're saying here is I'm setting up to do energy medicine, intuitive consultation. This is the parameters. I'm not going to that territory. Non-interference is section 6, which really just speaks about not getting in the way. Client says, hey, I've been on antidepressant medication. What do you think I should do about that? That's really delicate territory. You know, what does your physician say? I don't want to get in the way of that. It's really being sensitive to that territory. And as I said before, being aware that maybe a casual communication could be a first or second step, but you don't know what that fourth step is. So really being cautious in those first interactions related to that. But if they go off their medication because you inferred that you're not a real fan of medication and something horrible happens, that kind of thing. So just being mindful in advance. Talked about performing services you're qualified to perform. Respecting the professional status of others. You may not believe in herbal remedies. Some special kind of chiropractic work, but it's just not an appropriate place to cast an opinion in those areas. I haven't had much experience in that way. I'm glad it's working for you. A much safer direction. Moving on to section 7, avoid conflicts of interest. This is tricky territory because it can feel very subtle on the surface. So here they're speaking about managing conflicts. Avoid dual relationships that might negatively impact kind of the end work product, if you will. Avoiding any kind of exploitation. Put a big underline under this one. Never enter into a sexual relationship with a client. There's just never a balanced way to navigate the territory. There's always going to be a engagement of a power differential. So I just kind of highlight that one. And the last point in this section, stay alert. here, they go into all these different factors, but not to be paranoid, out of balance in regards to that alert status. But it's just remembering that this is a very sensitive realm of communicating, communication relationship. So it's one to take with an air of caution. So again, not paranoia, but just being mindful. Yes, this feels easy now, but this could lead to something balanced later. So let me just stick to these really clear boundaries such and such. So just kind of helping you to get your head around this framework. I'll speed through the last section here. Is the last one, 8, is continue professional development, education, intuitive medicine community. You know, here they're really talking about not allowing yourself to get to a place where I know it all. I'm there. I'm done. Got my training. And I'm just out kind of helping the world. But to really consider that you are signing on as a lifelong student. That this constant personal exploration is a way to enhance your integrity as you go. So here they mention expanding your effectiveness. You are on a journey, whether you want to see it that way or not. So really appreciating that as clients come to you, there's an evolution there. As kind of your practice expands or contracts, there's an evolution process there. So really kind of leaning into that by way of further training, further engagement, further work on self is really this idea of expanding your effectiveness. Here they mention supporting one's own health and resilience. As soon as you stop taking care of yourself, guess who's going to show up at your door waiting for healing? It's that person who's got a reflective issue that now calls you have to address that. But the complicated way of saying, you know, if you're not taking care of yourself, is going to show up as a complication in the sphere of practice. You know, we touched on the prioritizing the welfare of your clients. And the very last point is respect copyright and trademark information. So I kind of skipped past some of the ideas of developing coursework. I think that would be sort of a different conversation down the road. But, you know, if you're using intuition medicine, you know, you'd have a register R on it, on our Francesca's connection. If you're teaching even a one-on-one student session, you're drawing forward information from a book, you would recite what that book is. Obviously, in any of the material we've taken here, we've incorporated call-outs for those sources, where they came from. So hopefully that helped you illuminate this kind of otherwise dry technical document with kind of some expanded thinking. And as I say, you guys will come to it with a fresh perspective, and I really invite you to contribute anything that comes up. We're going to, after this question, we'll take a break. For about 15 minutes, please. Yeah. Thank you guys for being so quick. I'm so quick to jump right in because they're doing a great job.
Yeah, just going back to the medical area. Yeah. So when, you know, maybe I'm part of a panel or doing a reading on, you know, I've got a client and they get a clear hit of like, oh, they've got this, you know, some kind of diagnoses or something that's very clear. Usually I just don't say anything, or I'll say, oh, it might be a good idea to get checked out or something like that.
Yeah.
How would you phrase that kind of thing?
Great question. And I think it does come down to how you phrase it, how you're languaging. I got a hit such and such. I don't know how this comes across, but this is what showed up for me. Yeah. So you're doing your due diligence to communicate, but I would stay away from the advising. In other words, you're starting to attach this more impactful role. And I don't think that's where we're at. We're here being safe. We're here to kind of throw out what impressions we get. But we're not here to kind of save that person. We had a person bring up in the last course we taught of this that she sees things. She feels compelled to tell people what they are. But it just created a real lively discussion about, you know, what are the boundaries around it? You know, I saw this extreme thing that occurred. Do I speak it or do I just sit on it? So I think where we're settling here is not getting carried away with the compulsion to communicate, but really monitoring the language and the sale. Happy to speak with you further.
Okay. Sort of, and also, too, I mean, we touched on it in our last class with Dr. Chan, but, you know, sometimes, like in the past, I've come across someone who, you know, they're very sick and it's kind of their last days or months or whatever it is, and they would like to work with you. How do you phrase that as well? Like, oh, I don't think it's the right time, or I'm not the right person for you, or how do you approach that?
You're saying you got to hit yourself that this would not be a good client to work with?
Yeah, that they might be towards the end of their life.
So that's a problem for you personally?
No, I mean, there's just, we talked a little bit about what that can mean with the family and, you know, doing energy work together and, you know, death brings anger and all these other things, right? It can get quite messy, right?
But I think it goes back to some of the things we touched on, really having clear communication, clear boundaries as to, you know, what you're delivering.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to, you know, help you avoid that.
Right, right.
To promote some confidence and understanding. Whatever it is you're connecting to delivering.
Right. Not common, but, you know, on the kind of weird things that come up, right? So
it's real.
Yeah.
We have a number of hospice people.
Another question that came up last week, but Francesca asked me to ask you.
Okay.
So the question.
Jacqueline Chan spoke to this because she's in a unique role, and, you know, doctor on the one hand.
Yeah, slightly different. Just the notion of previewing a session for a session, and where the boundaries are on that.
Right. Yeah. Scott and I had mentioned that, or we were talking about something very similar here. Where I land on this myself is, if there's been an agreement to work together, it's okay to have a preview in that. But what I was saying earlier was, if you said, oh, this person has an agreement, I'm going to read their space, but I'm going to see if they can turn me off. I'm going to read their space, but I'm going to see if maybe we can. What I'm saying, so you use the opportunity to get in the door, but now you're kind of going off of what the basis was for the agreement, but not the person's space. So it's really having a lot of integrity around this person's deciding to work with me. But let's be clear on what the narrow definition of that is. And then, yes, I can preview within the confines of that connection. But it's a slippery slope to then say, just go ahead in the door and see what else might be there.
Yeah, and I think a few of us students have had the experience with our tutors, right? We're in a very clear agreement with our tutors, and it was previewing of spirit prior to starting the session. And I think the sort of like dissonance, or the reason it's come up as a question, is because that's the nature of the session, and we sign in very clearly every time. So Dr. Chan, you know, said she doesn't go into specifics. She'll preview what is the session going to be like? Is it going to be challenging? Is it going to be, you know, smooth flowing? But that was basically her response.
Yeah, I take it a little further myself, as I work with clients quite a bit. And I'll set up my space an hour in advance most often. And during that hour, I am very much focused on what is this reading about? How is the focus of this reading going to support this person? What kind of really deepen that before we're getting to that kind of the beneficial place for them. But I'm not going in there saying, what's going on?
You're not pulling up blueprints and timelines.
I'm really coming back to the singular focus of what is up for them, what, you know, how is this reading going to be supportive to them? So it's almost like a nugget, a focal point, that they keep concentrating on whatever comes forward for that. But I think there's a boundary of it. Not just like a free-for-all, they're just going to see what's going on in life, going on in their relationships, how they're doing in the family structure.
You're not starting the reading before the reading, you're
the reading. Majority of the time, the whole reading, once we engage, comes back to the point. So I'll start off the reading by saying, I got to hit in this direction. I got kind of things sketched out this way. Yes, but it's the heart of what I want to talk about. Then while I have them on, I'm expanding. So my personal practice, I'm very much engaged in preview, but how I justify it, clarify it, is that it's very focused. And that's somebody who's agreed to work with. So I wouldn't be doing that as a perspective. Trying to wow them. Like, I already did a reading, and here's some things I found. Aren't you enticed to work with me? Just one more question. I don't break off, and I'm happy to answer further questions.
You said that you do that an hour ahead of time. How much time?
It depends. I'm not trying to put myself out there as the model of what everyone should do. It's just I've been running around doing a lot of different stuff. I sort of need that time myself to kind of get into more of a focused place. Sometimes it's down to 15 minutes because I've worked with them a lot over time. It's easier for me to think up in that way. But I think an hour is a good time frame to just kind of settle my space, consider the boundaries, set up, that focal.
So this is going back a little bit, touching on what you were just discussing. If you see something in a person's realm, and it's clear that to mention it would do more harm than good.
You have an example?
I really don't want to.
Hypothetical.
Hypothetical.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone's, let's say, got a possession of a family member.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Got it.
Or something happened to them as a child.
Okay.
But it's manifesting in their minds currently in some other way.
Right.
But after checking in spirit to spirit, it's clear that to say anything at all around that would be damaging.
Yeah.
So how do you, in the interest of wanting to help, right, is it better just to let it go or try to institute another session or throw something out that's on the periphery? I mean,
okay.
How would you solve that?
I think it's a totally valid question. One of the reasons I really kind of probably went overboard in the opening meditation with is this referencing back to spirit, referencing back to the DSA model, is that it helps them navigate these tricky situations. If you're in a framework of, I'm the guy who's informing this person who's going to help save this, blah, blah, blah. Once you create that framework for yourself, then you're really caught up in a dilemma. If you said to yourself going into it, hey, I'm just seeing what I, saying what I see, I'm just here holding space, I'm just kind of holding this kind of sacred environment while they choose and define and progress their path, then you have an easier time navigating the situation. So it's really how are you coming at it that really helps to articulate what's up. In this specific situation, I think what comes up for me is in languaging. It's really holding space, really holding the strong intention of support, whatever way is appropriate. It sounds a little evasive, but, you know, it's like bringing SB into somebody's space. Same act. You're saying, I'm supporting you to create a condition where you can find your answer. But I'm not coming in saying what those answers are. I'm not coming in and defining what direction things should unfold.
Right. But just to sort of drill down a little bit further,
please.
What if the person just sort of bails on the whole process?
I think you got your answer. So I work a lot with SB in these situations, SB court. I may not be communicating that, but again, I'm getting to a realm where, like, hey, I need some support. I need to extract myself from the details.
The time and the place, right.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
I get it.
But I'm not saying negate the responsibility. I'm just saying do it with SB at the
helm. Like an anonymous note? No, I'm kidding.
Actually, it comes up in one of our hypotheticals. But we'll touch on that later. We'll do more questions and we'll have a break as a group.
I had a question about as we're starting to be tutors.
Yeah. It's very intimidating at first.
Yes, I am very.
I would just say, hang on,
okay.
Because before long, it's going to really flip. So everyone freaks out at first, like, holy cow, I'm still a student myself. What do I have to contribute to the next person? But you'll find that just talking about the basics, just holding ground, just kind of referring back to kind of beginner 101 stuff for you, usually helpful for them.
Okay.
And people come in and say, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm terrible. And Francesco will go, actually, that person called you out in class and said what a wonderful session it is. So you don't have a clear perspective on what a great contributor you are to this super beginning, you know, amoeba level student, you know, who's just coming at it for the first time. So trust yourself. Just go with the CNC, keep it basic, just be in your comfort realm. Something goes more advanced, just say, you know, nothing's coming up around that. Be happy to give you, you know, support to meet with somebody else for them more advanced questions. Really, you know, trust that you have a lot. Sorry, I got off track, because I feel strongly about that. So I hope I didn't throw you off track. What was your key question?
No, just any advice you had.
That was it.
Any advice.
Yeah, advice is really step into it with a lot of grace and self-ownership. And not feel, like I've been saying, that you have to be something. I think where people freak out is they go, wait a minute. That tutor I had was like so powerful, so great, blah, blah, blah. I'm supposed to be that? You know, and it's a setup. Of course you're not supposed to be that. You're supposed to be exactly who you are. And Francesca, trust me, has this magical way of matching people up. I'm sure you guys experienced it. And you drill down, like, wait a minute, why did I get teamed up with this person? Not always, but majority of the time, this kind of magical thing that Francesca put together to kind of draw you guys together. So just trust in her wisdom, how things play out, trust in the moment, trust in yourself, kind of translating what feels natural. And again, stick to the basics, really trust that those be powerful and really appropriate. The person does not need to go into past lives right now. You know, they need to stay grounded, be present for class. But they really do need to stay.
I liked your idea of taking the time beforehand, though, of just getting ready and, you know, not rushing.
Yeah. I love that to this day, I can be rushing from work, had a terrible day, not seen eye to eye with my boss, a little frustrated, walk in here and do a reading, drive down the road, feel like, you know, centered and happy. What is that about? You know, what is going on there? So I think it's the give a healing, get a healing story. There's kind of symbiotic thing. Yes, I know we're doing boundaries and neutral separations. That's all healthy and good, but there's still something transformative on my side, supporting somebody else. So I like that story. I like deepening connection to that. And I just come back to it. And delay, you know, here. It's like Scott shows up. We're not getting paid for the volunteer work.
I just want to add a little something I learned from my tutor, and it's if we're seeing each other on the spirit-to-spirit level,
yeah.
right, then judgment is gone. And it's just about these two soul beings communicating on the purest essence in communication. And so it transcends ego, physical, time.
I think you could probably, well, we're getting really philosophical here, but you could probably take it a couple of steps further. Say that is a dance of spirit. Yes, we can talk about separation and individuality, or we can just come back to this basic thread of it's just this kind of juicy stuff there. We're having a dialogue, positioning ourselves as separate, but I think when it comes right down to it, it's a story about, as you said, one spirit acknowledging the spirit of another. I always say that I'm having to raise up to my greatest good as I'm supporting somebody concentrate on an understanding of their greatest. So that's the, again, the give a healing, get a healing. By really concentrating on supporting you to be spirit, I too have to automatically rise to that capacity. So I love this stuff. You know, I've been doing it forever. You think I get bored, but it's still this generative. All right, we're going to take a break. And,
yeah. First, then we'll do groups.
Oh,
right?
Cool.
How does this work out? So, yeah, everyone on this wall and Kim, you guys go into this room over here.
Yeah, this will be after the break.
Yeah, after the break. And then everyone, Evelyn, up to Beth, you guys, we have to come on. Then first three rows, you guys go into the ground.
So guys on the phone, we're going to take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll get this situated with the different groups. The groups are set to just discuss some different hypotheticals, which are part of your email paperwork, and then we'll kind of come back together as a large group to further review. All right. So we have time for about 10 minutes. Focus on the existing. So that there's clarity and not on the casual. Like, I was touching on a couple of times. So the 20 minutes you spend up to be working for you. Okay, that's different. I thought if you were just going about your day and coming up. So that,
like,
I don't think
you can.
Right. this brought up a lot of questions. Because I'm down, and I have been for 18 years. And sometimes the charges I don't think I need to call them. And the last, I haven't done very much. One of the last doubts that the way I work is I say all the time now, and I set it up way before, and I work on the position for like half an hour, maybe as long as it takes. And then my defendant goes, they become 100% conscious, you know, angry. So, then I can we now go further?
I'm
Sarasota, the lighthouse.
Yeah.
Work itself right. Location. We're having trouble with the room here, but
During your work with her, she becomes interested in past life regressions and other treatment modalities. During one session, you notice she enters into a deep trance. When she returns, she expresses confusion as to what she was experiencing and wonders whether what she experienced was from a traumatic event that occurred in an early part of her life, this lifetime or a past lifetime. So the question is, what are your reactions and responsibilities towards your client?
I think the first part where she comes in with a lot of anxiety is to make sure that you're set up properly in your own space. So like boundaries and like security, the way that we walk into the academy, and you can, you know, you might be coming in with anxiety, but you have to drop everything at the door. And so if she can't, making sure that you're set up in your own boundaries, and then the sister and grounding, and to get set up before you do any sort of
In that case, I didn't want to say anything, but I felt it just wasn't appropriate. It wasn't.
That's not why they were there.
So,
not when they were there, and
so pursuant to the, is that the right word? Pursuant to the suspects? Okay. I was, it's pop. Would be to, let's say, take a look at some chakras.
No, I was just in an office.
And let's say, recommend some, looking at some balancing of those.
But it was really difficult.
You know, which would deepen
really
grounding, deepen a sense of her ability to hear. And let's say, so she would, let's say, hear more than 10 words out of 100.
I want to say something about that. I know that
hear more than 10 words out of 100.
I had noticed.
There's an idea that out of 100 words spoken in some of these readings, people only hear about 10 of them. So the idea is to broaden that.
Right. So I felt okay with what I said.
Yeah.
But when I came in on Monday and I was so right on about it, I was more like, I didn't feel anything that I
did
wrong.
The middle part about when she was about the trans thing.
In the person's
kind of
important. Definitely, I
would
have said. So there's a question about. There was a question about the situation when she's in a trance. So during one session, you notice she enters into a deep trance. When she returns, she expresses confusion as to what she experienced and wonders whether she experienced was from a traumatic event that occurred in an early part of this lifetime or a past lifetime.
Nothing's wrong. They're mad that they spent $400 on the doctor.
No, I want to be clear about that. I apologize. No, I just wanted to be clear about what I heard, and I don't have a comment on it, so please.
I think
I want to make sure I got this clear. So first session, a little work anxiety. Next session, expresses interest.
I'm unable to make a diagnosis.
Same or third session, goes into trance and is wondering if she's re-experiencing traumatic.
And I'm a nurse. I have to be really careful. I don't practice a life.
So
have to be very clear.
I think I would just say, you have any information about where this might have come from? And if not, let's not make assumptions. Let's not connect dots.
And it just comes up in your mind that, they have
to
you're not sure about it. You know, it's your mind.
Yeah.
And then I think, in addition to everything that Lauren said, then I would say ask the client to go inward and explore for more information, just like Francesca here would just be like, answer that for yourself. And then you could suggest booking another, having them come for another appointment and say, okay, the next appointment we're going to do the past life module. Then they're interested again. You say, okay, the next module we're going to do explore any sort of trauma maybe from this life. And the way that we've gone through it and learned it in kind of separate modules and being dialed in with that attention and showing specifically those things would be the best way to get that person more clarity. Have people support them on that journey instead of like mixing it all in.
One is that if they're not.
Just suggesting so, that like they should take the time to kind of explore where they that information is coming from, which is what Lauren was saying. And then if they are interested in past life work, setting up another appointment separately with just the intention of exploring past lives, past life timelines, et cetera. Because I think to go into one session and be like, oh, where's the trauma you're having in your genetic tape? Wait, maybe this is past life. I think that's too overwhelming. And then I think that it could put them in a higher state of anxiety. And so just kind of like contain them in the grounding and whatever information came up in that session and use their gauges to be like, maybe that's all that you could do for them in that session.
Like for me to answer this question right now,
there's a lot to unpack there, right?
Yeah.
I would also try to introduce the idea of astral body. But that sounds like a symptom
astral body out of control.
If I'm with a client, I'm
too big of a, like a tunnel.
If I'm truly doing it for their greatest,
and ask her how she's sleeping.
Yeah, your intuition.
How she feels when she wakes up.
Well, if you're not, if you're truly neutral. That's the key, right?
And if they're not willing to hear that, then what is the information?
It could be looked at. But, you know, with successive sessions, I think that's the critical part. But, again, like, I mean, who said grounding first? Is it you? Like, yeah, this is part of the process of teaching them about ground.
Because what you said, that's like brain thinking.
Right?
Oh, they have to go to the doctor, but maybe that's not what they need.
And
maybe that's what the spirit
So, okay, what I'm going to do is reiterate what has been said, and so feel free to edit on me, you know, how to change the message, right? Yeah? Okay.
So, in the course of my final project, I'm working with someone who has absolutely no language around this whatsoever. No, nothing but Western medicine is a frame of reference. And a language for spirituality that needs out of context of religion and all that. So,
don't you do it on my life?
I've noted that.
There's
a really
in this instance,
she's got interest in past life regression, and so I would be very careful to not introduce other big concepts like genetic tapes or astral body, not wanting to kind of open up too much more, and particularly
one thing, like the people that are close
that want to get an idea, don't give her too much material to mentalize.
Yeah. Meet her where she'll introduce you. Yeah. You want to do more of this. You want to get a taste of what I'm actually doing. And I think, you know, we do have information about past lives. So just really being clear, you know, how much information I'm hearing. I've just, in this first, like, working with this person, like, okay, well, life force energy is something that most people can, like, drop, but it gets into this area where it's like, wait, am I teaching or am I giving a sentence? Am I just like explaining concepts? Is that helping them integrate the energy and the information, or is that just like kind of opening up the hands?
Because even if you get it,
or, and taking me out of the session.
Well, and going back to what Jay was saying too, making sure just her seventh is closed, because if she's having these anxiety issues in transit, she might just be popping out of her head in fight or flight if she is dealing with trauma or something from this life or past life.
How do you take that information, and instead of saying, you know, your reticulated modulator is totally off whack with your aspirated cucaracha, you know, that's technical talk. But if you say, hey, you know, maybe you've had a past life issue, or maybe it's a present life issue, you know, words, anyway, point taken. Excellent. Really, yeah.
Add one more thing. I think in addition to the refining the language, but you can also do that energy work spirit to spirit, and you can be witnessing her and then assist her in the grounding and dialing down the chakras and or the seventh,
right,
and then just say, like, you know, with your permission.
Yeah,
like,
right,
you,
when they ask that, you say you can't put
that
on me. That
would be step one. Yeah, that could have like way
boundaries that I would have
how she wants to go about the healing work.
If you really
there,
use
but
your own healing
keep
guide,
it.
I would know.
Exactly, and you don't even have to say, like, I'm using your healing guide.
Right, you
use your tool. Exactly.
What I'm gonna do.
And you can just do that check in with, like, how much permission you're getting, and yeah, and really gauge that.
Energetically, no one else could
have having a raucous conversation.
And making sure that her aura is really connected to the needs her, not just straight down, giving her a little extra room so she is snug and stable and really thick and firm with the aura.
And this is kind of mixing what Lauren, you guys said, but, you know, because it is up to the client to heal themselves, right? To use terms, the term layman's terms in this case, to explain to them that they are the ones that have this power to heal themselves, that we don't, right? And that also maintains a higher level of integrity. But to explain to them in a way that allows them to access those tools to heal themselves. You know, so instead of saying, you know, I can't remember what I said, but, you know, the cord on the astral body. Say, you know, maybe you're, I mean, how would you say that so they could hear it and then use that and then heal with it?
Oh, like,
you know.
The one thought I had about that was, you know, to keep it simple in simple terms is, listen, why don't you think about keeping a dream journal next to the bed? Start writing down your dreams, and then if you want, feel comfortable, bring them in to share them with me. We can share them together, but that's something that's accessible, and it's not too mental, because once you write that stuff down, it just kind of, I don't know about you guys, mine turns into smoke, and it's just gone. And so what I have there is what's left, but that helped me a lot, was starting to write down. And the more I wrote down, the more I wrote down. But also they were becoming more, and the more big dreams I was having, it wasn't just rehashing the day. It was more like these pearls that I was taking with me, and that might be a good way for her, whoever, male or female, to be able to integrate what is being taught in a gentle way that just doesn't blow her away and completely overwhelm her. And we have 2 years of training under our belts, and we're just like, I'm afraid my first session is going to be like, I'm just going to vomit this shit all over somebody, and it's going to be.
Yeah, we're not collecting them. It was just to be able to share, but you guys can do it on the front.
Crazy.
Does she live nearby?
Yeah.
Do you live in Fairfield? Because I know how to deal with bullies, so.
That's true.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and going into that, you know, dream journals, if they will, you know, you may want to write down or investigate, you know, your dreaming patterns, right? And this is something that has helped with a lot of Academy students, because it's saying, like, you know, seeing her go into a traumatic, you know, like, episode and kind of experience that, getting way out of her body, and saying, yeah, you should do a dream journal. She'd be like, what? Right? So you can talk about how that may be a helpful tool, right? As well as inviting that grounding, closing the seventh.
Right.
And I think it would be, it could complicate things to bring another element in to what you guys were saying with the astral body. So it's something that you can work on. If they've already done that, then I think it's a good idea, but I wouldn't go into that. I'd keep it simple. Because, I mean, really, she might need to flush out chakras and close her seventh and whatever, and there might be something preventing her grounding, right? Yeah. And we've all popped out, right? Especially before bath. So,
I popped out earlier. It felt fantastic.
Yeah, I go back in and I'm like,
discussion on some of the key points we came up with in the smaller groups. So if somebody somebody from hypothetical one group wants to grab the sheet and do a quick read of what the sulfate was.
Do you want us to read the question first?
The question first, and then kind of top lines of where you landed with your discussion.
We cut out the part about
sitting.
Okay. Okay, here's the question. Your client tells you that she is very unhappy with the treatment she has been receiving. She's been doing everything you recommended, and her condition has not improved after 5 sessions. The client wants a refund for payments already made and an apology. You are puzzled by the lack of response from the therapies that you have provided and her dissatisfaction. What are the ethical issues presented, and what are your possible responses?
Cool. So what were some of the kind of more pointed elements of the discussion?
The first thing was, did we set up a good contract at the beginning and realistic expectations?
Setting expectations, yeah.
We talked about. And then do check-ins after each session and create more of a feedback loop.
Cool, yeah. Awesome.
And then possibly bringing in a neutral party. And then there was some discussion about whether maybe they'd go back and split the cost. And
okay.
People have different feelings about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of these kind of open discussions, because you sort of get a feel of like, whoa, wait a minute, I would never give any money back. And then a lot of people, especially last year's class, were like, automatic, here's your money back, you know, no problem. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of, basing kind of a balanced decision on your kind of personal makeup. But I think they're really fruitful discussions to have. And as I said before, this idea of mapping things out. So going into it, you're already informed. On step one, I already have a sense of what might happen on step four. It sounds weird, but it's really about getting a grasp of the situation, having that kind of extended perspective. Anything else that popped out?
We had a few more things.
Yeah.
We were talking about asking what is really coming up for the client and reassess the recommendations to see if there's something blocking their energy. That's maybe.
Yeah, you could have got to something really good. You know, you were touching on that third rail or whatever.
Might have, you know, been triggering something that needed further looking at. And then just saying, you know, don't be too quick to take on the responsibility without considering other possibilities. That was like, you know, you automatically say, I'll refund you, or do we look at this further?
Yeah. As I said, last class was like almost unanimous, like, here's your money back. It just seemed like the cleanest form of like neutralizing, separating, and who needs money that bad kind of thing. But it's not to say there's one magic answer to any of this. It's just really helpful to have these discussions. And I really encourage you to go back through a hypothetical in the handout, because it kind of goes through and a little more in the direction that Leah leads, you know, things to consider. But the purpose of this is just to kind of gauge how different people have kind of different standards. Was there anything else related to this hypothetical anybody wanted to throw out, thoughts that maybe we should discuss yet?
Yeah. Well, the question that I asked Jacqueline and that I'm still sitting with is, you know, how I read that question was through my, like, therapist-y lens, but also obviously inner medicine. And so there was this place for me of, oh, I think we're getting to something good now, you know, of, okay, what is this activating and what could be worked here? Not to say not refund or not dismissing the client's experience, but just to wonder whatever's coming up that's blocking the healing, probably is the material that we want to work with. And I guess I'm just really confused around scope. Like, what? Obviously, anyone who's seeing me knows the full extent of my background, so they're kind of consenting to working with all of it, I would guess. But there's something about, like, what can you see and say and work with, and what isn't
energy medicine?
There's really not a pat answer for that. It's really about this subtle capacity to really be in step with, to get in tune with that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of it is about developing the rapport, having the kind of safety connection, so that whether it's touching on something sensitive or not, you guys are in sync. You're on the same page working.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there's more of a standoffish kind of thing, I know best, trust me, then you're going to more likely hit stumbling blocks. So it's like, wait a minute, we're out of sync, and you're telling me something, but maybe something in my history says I'm supposed to rebel when I'm told something. But, you know, different things can get into the mix. So, and it can be tough to come back from those. So I think the underlying thing is, how can you stay in step? How can you kind of use communication, questioning, whatever techniques you choose, how can you use those to really stay in sync?
And that,
ultimately, it's not their process.
Of course. And that goes without saying. It's just more wondering if there's something, if that's a what feels like a wall in that question, if that's actually like where there's room to explore. But of course, it's up to them how much and in what way they want to do that.
Yeah, I don't come up against those kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking myself right now in this moment, like, what is that about? And I think it's really this strong commitment to really have their spirit be the conversation.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? What if something does come up that feels, you know, like, it's then how do I use my languaging to be in step with where they're at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think ultimately it does come back to my agenda versus their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is juicy territory and we need a breakthrough. So
how
could we turn that around and say, from their perspective, what does breakthrough look like? From their perspective, what is progress in this moment really play out as? So it's really, again, filtering it through being in sync with, using languaging that's more familiar or in step with who they are. But good territory to consider, you know?
Yeah.
And again, getting ahead of the curve by considering these things before they're up in your face and, you know, like on the fly and trying to figure out how to back down or give money back or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay, so why don't we move on to hypothetical two? So who has that clipboard? You guys are number two?
Number two.
Okay. So if you guys didn't write down a bunch of notes, that's fine. Maybe just kind of open it up to who had thoughts or, you know, key points that were discussed.
So I'll read hypothetical number two. Through a process of several sessions, you have become aware, suspect, that your client has a growth that you believe may be malignant, and it is unrelated to the treatment for which she is seeking assistance. You feel the situation is urgent and repeatedly suggest that the client have the condition evaluated by a medical professional. Despite your repeated suggestions, the client refuses to get a medical diagnosis for the growth. You happen to know your client's doctor's name and your client's spouse.
Yeah, we just threw that in to kind of spice it up a little further.
What action should you take? So, we came...
Okay, so you got you had consensus as a group.
Yeah,
okay.
We had consensus that even though you know the spouse and even though you know the doctor, even if they're your best friend, it's not really your place to tell them. It's up to the client. So
no matter what.
Yeah, because that's not going to support their healing. If they're ready for that, they can just as easily tell them, right? So, I mean, unless we did come up with the caveat that if it's a minor, you may tell their parents or their guardians.
Yeah.
Right. So, but if it's not a minor. Yeah. So, but if it's an adult, then you really have no place telling anyone. You could mildly suggest them. We also came up just holding space and compassion for them and maybe just continue with doing whatever energy work their spirit feels will support healing. So you would just continue
with the
healing.
At the dynamics, whether you're communicating them directly on the specific focus you're having, but looking at the energetic dynamics of why are they not seeking the right support around this? You know, is there a shame story tied to some kind of experience in the past or whatever? And then bringing SB to support that. So again, you're not driving the change, but you are the cheerleader on the sidelines doing as much as you can to support that change. So it is a line, and you're respecting that line, but it doesn't mean you can't go right up to that line and really hold space. So,
yeah.
Any other thoughts? Yeah.
I'd also just add, especially with the anatomy class and what we took, and if you have a clear picture of, like, you know, that's on a lung or a certain organ, that's going to be tied to a certain emotion or a certain area of life, could be aggression, whatever it is, right? So that might be worth going back to notes on that, right? And also within Chinese medicine, there's certain parts of your foot, right? There's certain parts of your ear, whatever it is, right? So it might be something to look at and then ask, like, an open-ended question with, you know, how do you feel about, right? Or, just kind of open that up and see if anything comes up. But again, just holding that space and boundary. And if they don't want to, I mean, nobody wants to experience, right? These traumas or really face their fears, right? So it's really tough. So it's probably going to come up anyway.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, all good points. And then you could get into the whole trip about, like, hey, I'm here supposed to be helping people, and this person is going down a path that's counter to that. I'm trying to create positive results, and they're doing things and causing something to move away from that. And I don't want to stop that. I want to do my direction. But, you know, so, yeah, it gets tricky. And then it can be a mental story about, let me get real technical about what might be helpful, and lose sight in that process of, you know, where their process is. I think I overheard you mention that they may have a whole different trajectory that's right for them. How can you be in step with that and get in sync and support that while being the cheerleader, while providing, you know, the most supportive backdrop?
Yeah, I was thinking that they may need to experience something, you know, more drastic before they bottom out.
Maybe that's relevant for the path they're on.
Yeah.
It's not for you to decipher what that path is.
Yeah, you're following. You're not, like, leading it. You're following it.
Yeah, and bringing in the ideal scenario for them to have kind of an optimal chance at connecting with their spirit. And with connecting with that kind of divine directional force within them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not defining that, but you're there supporting it for them. Cool. All right, so let's switch on to hypothetical 3. Does anybody have that? Yeah, great. So we'll read the question or the hypothetical and the question and go into feedback.
A client who happens to be a landscaper calls for an initial appointment. He has been without work for the past 3 months due to an injury that is to be a focus of your work together. Once you tell him your fee, he says that he simply does not have the money, but he really wants to work with you. He asks if he can do a work exchange of landscaping in repayment for sessions. You have just moved to a new home that needs landscaping, but you are unsure how much work needs to be done on your new home. What are your key considerations and decisions regarding this work trade opportunity? So we had different points of view all the way from, you don't want to bring someone to your house that you don't know, so maybe doing a couple sessions before, not in your house, to doing a 15-minute consultation to see if you connect and if it's a good idea to work, to checking how many sessions he may need, and then doing a very clean calculation of, like, my fee divided by his fee, the amount of sessions I know he needs, using what Dr. Chen said last week of, like, checking how many sessions you think he may need. But I think ultimately we landed on, it's a matter of checking up with you and being honest with yourself don't agreeing out of guilt or out of feeling like you have to help this person because he's out of a job. But if it feels right for you, then just be very clear in what the exchange is from the get-go. And I think some people said it may not feel good for them because money is an energy and you have to honor your work as well. And so I think at the end we said it's a personal choice. Check in with yourself and be honest and just be very clear from the beginning.
I think that's kind of a key point in that one is having clarity up front, having boundaries, having kind of a clear parameter of what you're stepping into. And doing, as you described, kind of a pre-read of the arrangement. How does this work for us on a technical level, logistically? You know, what feels right? You had your hand up?
I just noticed something. This guy can't even work. How are they going to prepay us?
Yeah, I think him as you started. No, it's tricky.
Right.
So maybe the first reading you commit to doing for free over the phone, and that's the starting point. And then you say, hey, I like this guy. There's some good potential here. I felt like we were actually turning the corner on some stuff. I'm going to be rewarded just in the fact of reading. Maybe I reduce my rates, but to this mark. And then, you know, he seems trustworthy enough. I'll start with some, you know, landscape work and we'll go from there. Or maybe we'll commit to two sessions and then reconnect and reassess on both sides. Maybe he feels like his work is more valuable than what you're providing. You know, again, communication, staying in sync, once again, is a big factor. Any other thoughts that came up around that? It seems abstract, but this is real world stuff, and that's why it's like, wait a minute, let me get ahead of this curve here with this stuff and kind of plot out. Okay, so hypothetical four.
Okay, so your client comes in for work with relatively mild anxiety issues related to her work situation. During your work with her, she becomes very interested in past life regressions and other treatment modalities. During one session, you notice she enters into a deep trance. When she returns, she expresses confusion as to what she experienced and wonders whether what she experienced was from a traumatic event that occurred in an earlier part of this lifetime or a past lifetime. What are your reactions and responsibilities towards your client? So we had a lot of notes, a lot of great thoughts. Some of the comments were, you know, to make sure that you set up your own boundaries, your own grounding, right? And to assist her with her grounding, to make sure that, you know, she's not popping out of her sevens and, you know, what's preventing her from grounding. Look at her chakras, help her balance those, and to really speak in a language that she will understand. So not to introduce new concepts, which could be, you know, a bit jarring and get her thinking analytically and right and kind of going to another area. So let's see. Also to ask questions and to recognize maybe like what happened, right? So a great suggestion was, I witnessed you in a trance-like state. Do you know where this comes from? So let's hold space to this experience, right? So to just kind of call it out. And also to set up an appointment for another separate appointment to explore past lives. You know, again, if that's kind of agreeable to you both and that feels right. So those were a few ideas. Anything else you guys want
to? One thing I'd like to add is it's sort of a riff on what I was saying before. You're geared towards being in sync, but what if the person you're trying to be in sync with is like, I want to do all this radical, weirdo, you know, abstract stuff, and you're like, wow, I was checking in with your spirit. That's not really, you're not in sync with yourself. How can I then step in and, you know, choose sides here? So I think it brings up an interesting debate. You know, if we're trying to be in sync and have this positive healing rapport, how do we navigate that when the person is kind of out of it? So I think it's a huge red flag when they're directing the show and like, you know, exhibiting kind of extreme behavior going into trance. that smacks of possession and drugs and all kinds of stuff. So red flag there. There's a red flag in over-directing the session. You know, you came to me to, you know, have some work and some support, and you're kind of taking the wheel and wanting to do this and that and the other thing. That's not a cue for me to be in sync with a client. I'm more aligning with their spirit and then figuring out the languaging to have synchronicity happen on all fronts. So synchronicity between the different parts of them. You know, sometimes I'll be visualizing the different parts of them sitting at a table, and I will actually speak to, you know, we are syncing up different aspects of you right now. That's what this focus is. So let's do some grounding. Let's really call out what these different aspects are. So it's really synchronicity on a different level. It's what really showed up for me in that hypothetical. Any other thoughts or considerations that kind of came up? Yeah.
It's on the same line, but what came up for me was like, how do you even know that she was in a trance? Like, I thought it was suspicious that she started getting interested in all of these things, and then suddenly she goes in a trance. Like, I'm very cautious that I think sometimes we want to experience something, and then we think we're experiencing. And as the healer, you may want to see something, and you may think you're seeing it, but it's not really what's happening. So I think it's on the same line of what you just said. Like, if you stay on the spirit-to-spirit communication, it may not be a trance. So my initial question was, like, how do you know it was a trance? Like, what exactly happened? So I'm just suspicious.
For me, I'm not as concerned, to be honest, about what it is or didn't happen. I'm really continuing my conversation with what is spiritually aligned, what is in their highest good. Maybe in step with that, and guess what? We got to really dig up that past life and suss that out and ground out the energy that's still swirling about. Maybe that is the story. But more likely than not, it is not that story. You know, you may find this with some of your 2Ts. You know, they want to do all this advanced stuff. And you're reading their space going, you know, your gas tank is right here. You're not going to drive to L.A. and back. You know, it's just not going to happen. So we're going to be in step with what is realistic. We're going to sort of, in the background, hold the space for this alignment to occur between the parts of you and the connection be spoken of more directly so that we can expand on this avenue of communication. It's tricky and it's subtle, but really being the champion for the integrity of their being is key. Yeah.
So it's actually a question for both. I don't know if you see clients as well, but for both of you. But my medical doctor and I used to joke. He used to say, you know, WebMD is like the bane of his existence now because everybody's self-diagnosing. And, well, I have these symptoms. And did you look at this? And did you look at that? And he's like, yeah, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. I have a good handle on it. But what I was going to ask you was, because there's so much information, especially lately, that people are being exposed to with consciousness, the Gaia channel, and they, you know, the books on mindfulness and meditation and yoga classes and things, What do you do when someone comes in and they start to try to self-diagnose or get ahead of themselves, like you were saying, you know, like they were talking about, I think the past life, they were talking about past life was a specific one there, where they're just trying to get, they're trying to run before they can walk. How do you, or have you ever dealt with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a common thing, to be honest, that I have to run into. I think,
that's a blessing.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, because I do that reflection as you're talking. I'm like, okay, you know, what in my reference, you know, aligns with that? It's just not a common thing to be. I don't deal with a ton of brand new clients. And also my reading style is like talking a lot. So I'm communicating. I'm supporting the synchronicity by constantly staying in touch verbally. So to be honest, there's not a lot of room for them to come in with a lot of stuff. I've already sort of contained the communication. I've offered up what my concentration is, what I'm doing, where I think there's value, and I'm offering openings for them to say, is that out of step? Would you like to incorporate other things? And 99% of the time, they're like, no, that's spot on. This is where I want to go. This is the meat of the matter. Stay on this course. So I think it comes back to synchronicity. But that's a tricky one. I think I did have one person here at Hackathon ask me about things that were outside the scope of the type of work we do. And I just flat out said it. That's kind of beyond the type of things we cover here. So it was about aliens or something like that. And I think intuitively I felt like, what does that have to do with anything? But I didn't say that.
Right.
I just kind of used languaging to say, we're not going to go there. We're going to take on course here. And in this communication, what I've defined as this communication is really for supporting you to be more present, to get more in touch with who you are. What does feeling have to do with that? So that was like one kind of slight example of that. But it's tricky. I mean, I think you've got to develop your style of communication to accommodate these kind of curveballs that can get thrown at you once in a while. Yeah.
Well, you could tell them to go sign up at the academy. That's actually happened. I didn't go into trance, but an alumni was doing Reiki sessions and introducing, I had an intuitive mentor before, but he was introducing some new concepts, and I was like, tell me more. I want to learn more. And he said, I think you should go sign up. Go check out the academy. And so I would say he was an integrity, and I never railroaded any of the sessions, but it did. It was a deep curiosity and yearning for more that led me here.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that as a pattern of, like, this person really needs to soak up concentrated information. They're not just subtly exploring for themselves. You know, it can show up as, like, symbols and information. And, sometimes I'll meet clients here at the academy. I'll use one of the rooms here on off day. And as they're walking out, I'll say, here's a little pamphlet, you know. There was one situation where that really lit up as a person very much aligned with being able to bring on more information in that way. So. All right, well, I didn't quite keep my promise to get this out of here. But I will get us out of here on time. So unless there's a more final question thing, meditation, but ends up. So go ahead. Recenter yourself and draw yourself back into your meditation sanctuary. Let's start by doing some neutral separations. Anybody you kind of considered this evening? Anybody you've been here present with? Your classmates? One awesome TA? Francesca, any others related to this work to me? Really take a moment to make space within yourself to ground in the new information you've taken on board. Really welcome that understanding, which is ultimately your information coming online. Just allow that to be grounded. Confirm your main grounding points. Just kind of flush some of your life force energy down through those channels. Again, to bring in this vibrancy of present time awareness. It's a good way to take ownership, to really claim this energy, this information. In the same spirit, really reclaim your personal sacred temple that we started with. State of honoring that pure higher resonance within your own field. Reclaim your sense of being whole. nobody's perfect, but we can assert a connection with this place of wholeness within us. Really, once again, honor and possess yourself there in the space, in the sacred temple. Know that possessing yourself is a form of having good boundaries. The two go hand in hand. Really hold space for continuing to honor your light. Really with a sense of neutrality, really consider how your light may inspire others, inspire them to seek out a better understanding themselves of their own life. So just kind of affirm this picture of your understanding coming online, manifest as you brightening up and being your light, and that as a connection point can inspire and support others to kind of click on and be more in step and more in the resonance of their spirit. Towards a close, I wanted to just call out a very simple quote I came across that sort of inspired this same point. And that you may have heard it before, but it's darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. It's attributed to Martin Luther King, I think I've heard others say. So again, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Finally, reflecting on tonight's class, just consider once again being a light for yourself and others. And really trust that that'll be your best approach. That'll kind of get you out of sticky situations, kind of mentalizing, trying to figure things out, strategizing. It's powerful. Okay, well, when you're ready, come on out of meditation, give yourself a big hug, and thank you all for your active participation. Wonderful.